visiting with Roy Lee Lindsay today, the executive director at OK Pork. Let's talk a little bit about the new pork strategy and what all that entails.
Just this last week, the launch of their new, what they call a master brand as Real Pork. And this is not a an advertising strategy like the other white meat or Pork Be Inspired. This is more, let's tell our story. And it's the story of pork production from the farm to the table. And the people that are involved, let's talk about the folks that work on the farm every day. Let's talk about the care we give to the animals. Let's talk about the care we take with our natural resources. We've spent years working fundamentally under a set of ethical principles that really drive our industry. And this Real Pork strategy takes and incorporates those principles really into everything we do as we talk about the industry as a whole. And as we look to the future, we know consumers have a much greater interest today in where their food's coming from. And the big drive behind Real Pork is to connect consumers to that information about where their bacon and their pork chops come from.
Well, and the good news is China's been implementing record volumes of pork, and this has been a great, great thing for the pork industry as well, to kind of get the word out and also be able to fuel that fire for the love of pork.
Yeah, as we think about, just this in general, we look at the short synopsis, if you will, of Real Pork is, that Real Pork celebrates everything that's real about pork. Real stories, real farmers, real farms, the real way people feel when they enjoy the flavors that you get when you cook with pork. And it's going to be a part of everything National Pork Board does. We're incorporating it into our promotional items, into our social media outreach, into our plans as well. And looking at how do we grow consumer demand and consumption of pork, as well as consumer support and an understanding of where their food's coming from. And I think Real Pork long-term is going to be very valuable in that space.
Well, it's been a really tough year for ag producers in general, but really specifically for pork producers this year. What do you think pork producers right now need additional help with? I know that we've been talking about Seaboard being at full capacity. Do you think we're going to see another backlog there? Do you think we've kind of made it through this whole thing?
If I had a crystal ball, I might be able to answer that question. I feel like you remember the old magic eight ball that you shook it and it would tell you that the answer is unclear at this time or something?
Is that what you've been doing?
I think that's where a lot of us are. We've been very fortunate, at least here in Oklahoma, that we did not, while we saw a slowdown at the plant earlier this year in April, May timeframe, we saw a slowdown at the plant in Guymon. We've not seen, we've been running very near or at capacity for the last several weeks. And it's allowed us to catch up on the backlog that we had here in the state in terms of animals that didn't go to market when they were originally planned. But that's not the case all across the country. Not every plant has returned to capacity. And so nationally today, we're running at about 95% of what our capacity was at the end of last year. That's a little bit concerning still, because we've got a large number of animals coming in fourth quarter of 2020, in the first quarter of 21. There's a tremendous number of hogs coming, and we need to be able to run those plants at full capacity. Now, when we sit and think about it, when we manage our herds for disease, we manage for herd health and we look for herd immunity, and our hope would be that none of our processing plants are as the populations aren't naive, meaning that the unexposed as they were back in March and April and May of this year. And so we would hope that provides some immunity within the plants. We also know that we learned an awful lot as we went through this stretch back in March, April, and May. We learned that producers are incredibly resilient. We learned that they are incredibly resourceful. To be able to change diets on animals and hold hogs at lighter weights without them continuing to grow at 2.5, 3 pounds a day, that allowed us to really avoid some of the challenges of hogs that just got too big. But when you hold hogs for a length of time, you still got to be able to process a backlog. And if you can't run but at 95% capacity, and you got more hogs than that to start with, you're going to run into some challenges, I think, as we get later on into the year. In talking to some of the economists, there are folks out there that believe there's still 1 million to 1.4 million hogs that backed up earlier this year that are still looking for places to go. We're looking at, you know, that number could grow as we head into the fall because we've got more pigs coming. And certainly if we were to see another round of coronavirus outbreaks that force slowdowns at plants or heaven forbid forced another shutdown somewhere, those things could really put us back into that same kind of drastic position we were in March, April, and May here in Oklahoma.
Let's switch gears a little bit. Give us an update on the on African swine fever, because I feel like we've talked a lot about different diseases and the coronavirus, and that's been on the forefront, but this thing is still happening.
Oh, sure. We're still seeing the spread of African swine fever around the globe. China is still reeling from the virus. We've exported more product to China than at any time in our history in the last several months. Still looking at China maybe taking 10% of all of our production for 2020. And all of that's in the middle of an ongoing trade dispute. So, you know, if we could resolve that trade dispute, we might well be able to sell a lot more pork into China. I don't think that's very likely. I think that certainly not between now and November that anything drastic is going to happen there. They're going to continue to buy pork from us because we have it. We have plenty of it. We have it at a very reasonable price, especially compared to what their cost is within China. But it's still going to be a real challenge for us in terms of moving product to there. So as we look around the globe, what we see is how do we learn lessons from our experience with coronavirus, where we stopped, we were unable to move pigs to processing plants because they were closed due to COVID. What lessons did we learn from that would help us if we got to an African swine fever outbreak where we actually had USDA order a stop movement on animals for 72 hours or whatever window of time that is, while they determine where the index cases are and the right way to respond. So while we've been having lots of exercises and making decisions about what we might do in the case of a stop movement order, what we actually found was that the COVID experience was a much better practical application of those theories, if you will, those thoughts, those plans, than anything we had done in terms of actually the exercises. So I'm actually working on a piece right now asking my members about movement of animals. We shipped, by my math, 8.5 million pigs out of Oklahoma last year. That's roughly 6.5% of all the pigs that are born in the United States are born right here in the state of Oklahoma. And we ship those out of the state. They go to the Midwest. They go to Iowa, to Indiana, to Illinois, where they're closer to grain to be finished out and then on to market. And we're dependent on those movements. It's not something we can work around for any real length of time. And so we continue to ask our members, what do we need to be able to do in terms of movement? Can we work with the other states that we ship pigs into? We also ship a large number of pigs into Kansas and Texas. That come back to the plant in Guymon, if you will, and how do we build some systems in place and some cooperative agreements, if you will, so that in the event of a foreign animal disease, we can still move pigs back and forth from Oklahoma to Kansas or Oklahoma to Iowa or Illinois or Indiana, whatever that might be. What are those things we have to do to be able to move them, and how can we get those in place before we have a problem? So that when you flip that switch, what we found when we got to COVID, we actually turned the plants off, is we weren't prepared for what that really meant.
Right.
And that's a really hard way to learn a lesson, it is a lesson that I think we learned, and now we are working to make sure when we get to a foreign animal disease problem down the road somewhere, we are far better prepared, at least far more knowledgeable about what we don't know. You know, that's the old adage. There's what you know, what you don't know, and what you don't know, you don't know. And there was a lot of stuff there we didn't know. And I think that helps us tremendously in preparation. There's still an awful lot of work to go. A foreign animal disease like African swine fever would be absolutely devastating to our herd, devastating to our industry. I can't begin to put an economic value on that, but we're exporting 29% of our product today, and we would lose all of that export market immediately. So the impact on price for animals would be astronomical. And the economic impact would be disastrous of a foreign animal disease. So we are doing everything in our power to keep foreign animal diseases out of the country. And COVID was actually a pretty good learning experience for us for a lot of those plans and a lot of those thoughts we had as we might deal with a foreign animal disease in the future.
Yeah, because I mean, nobody wants to be in the middle of a pandemic, right? But you're talking about some really good lessons that have come out of this that are only going to make the system better going forward.
Right. And I think it's important, you know, I'm talking about the lessons we learned from COVID, but remember that COVID's not a disease of swine. Swine don't carry that disease. They don't spread that disease. It's not something that you have to be concerned about when you're thinking about pork. The same would be true with African swine fever. African swine fever is a disease that only affects pigs, so it doesn't affect human health. So again, people don't have to be concerned about that as in terms of if we were consuming pork. But so aside from that, there were some things that were very similar. We stopped movement of pigs to processing plants. What did that do to our production system? If we get a foreign animal disease, we're going to stop movement of pigs to processing plants. And what will that do to our production? So we got some real world experience in what that looks like. In the upper Midwest, they had to depopulate some farms because there was simply no place to go with the animals. And we got some experience at what does that look like. A lot of the places we were able to use some of the plans we had developed for how would we depopulate or euthanize a herd in case of a foreign animal disease. So we actually got to go out and practice some of those things. As horrible an experience as that is, and as awful a decision as that is for us, it gave us some real practical knowledge, and those things will benefit us long-term. Again, it's not the way you want to learn. What is it? Experience is the best teacher, but a lot of experience is hard. This was really hard. And so I think that's, we're going to get some good out of it, but there's still a lot of bad going on within the industry in terms of the impact, and a foreign animal disease like African swine fever would be absolutely disastrous for us.
Do you think that pork producers should see some additional funding, like coronavirus funding going forward, that would be needed?
It's definitely needed. There's no question, and we certainly, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't take this opportunity to say a big thank you to the folks in Senator Inhofe's office and his staff. We sat down with the senator back in May and outlined what the challenges were we were experiencing in Oklahoma and what we needed to get done. And he told us, he said, we're going to make something happen. I'll get my team on that and we will come up with something and we'll make something happen for you. And, you know, you always kind of, you nod your head and you say thank you and you appreciate the time on the phone and the rest of it. And then when you get that phone call back from his team that says, hey, we've got some legislation being written and we're looking for co-sponsors and can you help us get some co-sponsors? And they've now lined up a number of co-sponsors for the Relief Act, is what it was called, was a Relief Act, that would provide some additional funding for pork producers all across the country. This is not about just helping producers in Oklahoma. It's about helping our industry as a whole. And Senator Inhofe and his staff were tremendous help to us as we went through that. You're now looking at, you know, the largest fund. I heard somebody say this the other day, the largest funding bill ever passed by Congress in terms of an emergency funding bill was the first or one of these COVID bills that was $2 trillion. And the House has proposed $3 trillion and the Senate has proposed $1 trillion. So the difference between the two of them is the same amount as the largest bill they ever passed in history.
Wow.
So they're really not close to coming to an agreement. We'd like to see them figure out how to work through that. All of agriculture is reeling. All of us are hurting. And again, the thing to come back to when you think about that, we typically are not ones to go to the government and say, we need money from the government. Matter of fact, we typically would tell you we don't want government help. But this is a situation that was completely outside our control. There was nothing that we did as an industry that caused this problem. The problem was related to a human health issue that no one could control. Right. And it's had a devastating impact on restaurants. And by the way, one of the ways that we responded was we closed restaurants. Well, when you close restaurants, 25% of the pork in the country is sold in restaurants and institutions. When you closed universities, when we closed schools, we closed a huge market for us. And the same thing happened to the milk guys. The same thing happened. You closed white tablecloth restaurants. How much beef is sold in white tablecloth restaurants? I think it's 50%+ of all the beef is sold through food service and institutional use. So when you close those avenues, and we're not arguing whether you should have or you shouldn't have closed them. That's not the discussion here. But you've got to recognize when you make that decision, one of the outcomes of that is this extended impact back on swine producers, livestock producers as a whole. And we're continuing to try to recover from that. And you see folks today, we still see restaurants operating at half capacity. You still see dining rooms that are closed. You can only go through the drive-thru. You still see folks that are sitting at home. You and I both know people that just are not going out. They're not going out to eat. They're staying at home because they believe that's what they should do to keep themselves safe, to keep their loved ones safe. Now, all of that is still continuing to have an impact on the price we're being paid for our animals, the price we're being paid for pork. All of that impacts where we go. And then ultimately, in kind of a bigger 30,000 foot level, you know, the markets hate uncertainty.
Right.
And if there's anything that's more uncertain than this experience we've had with COVID, I don't know that I've experienced it in my lifetime. Because nobody knows what tomorrow is. Are our kids still going to be in school tomorrow? I mean, my daughter's going to school from home 5 days a week because her school system's closed. I mean, essentially is closed. They're teaching and we're interacting with the teacher every day and all those things. But she's not sitting in a classroom with her classmates. Again, I'm not being critical of that decision, but I'm saying it creates uncertainty. And when you ask the school, when is that going to change? They tell me, well, might change after the board meeting in October.
Yep.
Might.
Yeah.
So I can't tell her what school looks like at Christmas. What does next spring look like? And markets react the same way to that uncertainty. There's nothing out there that says all our restaurants are going to be back to normal in 30 days or 90 days where you can begin to plan for where you're going. That's the real challenge, I think, for all of us long-term is how does that uncertainty impact, what the future holds and what we're getting paid for animals we're producing and what market signals should we follow? I just don't know what those answers are. So I'm back to my magic eight ball and it's telling me the future's uncertain or it's cloudy or the answer's not coming right now.
Yeah, I mean, I feel the same way. Well, Roy Lee, thank you so much for visiting with us today.
Yes, ma'am. It's my pleasure.